This is Scott Becker with the Becker Private Equity and Business Podcast. This is the podcast for entrepreneurs, founders, CEOs of private equity and venture capital funded companies. Thrilled today to visit with an entrepreneur, the founder and CEO of MindClick. We're working today with Joanna Abrams. Joanna's going to tell us about herself, her career, MindClick, give us some advice for entrepreneurs, and a lot more. Joanna, can you take a moment and introduce yourself and tell us about MindClick?
Yes, and thank you so much, Scott, for having me on today. It's a pleasure and honor to be on your podcast. So MindClick is a big data and analytics company focused on sustainability in the supply chain. And really what we're about is providing the what we call product intelligence to help organizations identify the environmental and social impact of the products that they're purchasing in support of some key ESG objectives, decarbonization being one of them, diversity, equity, inclusion being another, but really recognizing that so much of what is about ESG is tied directly to the purchasing decisions that organizations make. So we gather data for every aspect of a product's life cycle, following globally accepted sustainability standards, social responsibility standards, and provide ratings. And those ratings do a couple of key things. Number one, they drive continuous improvement. So manufacturers understand the changes that they can make to really address the issues of whether it's waste, whether it's their carbon footprint, healthy materials, the circularity of products. It also helps purchasing decision makers understand not only the impacts, but they have access to comparative analytics. So they too can then turn around and demonstrate that as a result of responsible sourcing or purchasing decisions, they're able to make a really big impact on our world, supporting the challenges that we face from climate change, social unrest, certainly diversity, equity, inclusion, and risk mitigation.
Thank you very, very much. And talk a little bit about how did you get into this and how did you start with MindClick? How did you get this started? Talk a little bit about that, if you don't mind.
Yeah, it's been an interesting journey and continues to be so, Scott. Early in my career, there were companies that would have these programs where they would train future executives and you would have an opportunity to be involved in all aspects of the business before you rose to the C-suite. I didn't do that at one company, but I've done that throughout my career. So I actually started in the world of finance and accounting. I was a runner on the floor of the Mercantile Exchange and then went to work for Arthur Andersen and did litigation and government contract consulting work there, and then went to Harvard Business School. And I had exposure to the world of consumer products and running brand management through work that was occurring at Arthur Andersen, and was fascinated by the ability to, in essence, run a business within a business, which is what you do in consumer packaged goods companies. I was fortunate enough to land at a PepsiCo-owned company at the time, Taco Bell, followed by stints in the world of Nestle, Wolfgang Puck, and so on. And in that work, not only was involved in brand marketing, but in product development, and oversaw all aspects of that, from manufacturing, distribution, packaging, the whole thing, which really gave me insight into the whole world that we are involved in today with the supply chain. I then took a pretty interesting jump and was recruited to help turn around a mediation arbitration company that the world knows well today, JAMS. And it was a big leap for me at the time. And I was asked to be VP of marketing to help with this turnaround and, you know, ask the question of, am I ready for this job? And the CEO gave me fantastic advice that I've followed my entire career, which is you just need to know how to ask the questions. You don't have to have all the answers. And that's been something that's been a core part of my journey. I worked with the CEO and helped to lead the turnaround of that organization, and then jumped into the world of technology feet first, and was particularly fascinated by this world of what's called usability testing with respect to how do you optimize the performance of it was websites at the time. And ended up, after running an interactive agency, long story short, ended up doing multi-year work with Toyota, helping them optimize the effectiveness of their automotive websites in comparison to competitors in the marketplace. And we actually beat out JD Power This is at the beginning of MindClix as a company doing this work. We beat out J.D. Power to be chosen to do this year-over-year evaluation of the effectiveness of automotive websites, and got deep into the world of research as well in the work at MindClick. And because of the exposure and the work with Toyota, two things happened. One, I was introduced to the world of Kaizen, continuous performance improvement. And two, got exposed to the Prius, which was the it car at the time in Hollywood. And found a passion that was recognition of a changing world. And, you know, I like to call myself a capitalist tree hugger. I was raised in Oregon, and I saw a future in which there was going to be a need for a tremendous amount of data and analytics to support this journey that we all are now on. And Toyota showed me the way in terms of this whole approach to continuous improvement, establishing key performance indicators and measuring performance year over year. I mean, we're all familiar with what came out of Japan at the time and the whole, you know, TQM movement and so on. So I got the benefit of that and almost stumbled into this world of sustainability and quickly understood that one of the biggest challenges that organizations were facing was the lack of a clear framework by which to evaluate their performance and drive improvement. Ended up in an event, met an individual as a leader in the hospitality industry providing fabrics to the industry, her challenges, her colleagues' challenges as manufacturers trying to provide better products from the standpoint of environmental and social responsibility, and proposed a solution for the industry in order to provide the insights that buyers need, as well as manufacturers themselves need to not only promote their performance, but improve their performance year over year. And we ended up partnering with Marriott International, whose CEO, who we sadly lost this past year, he was a visionary. And 10 years ago, he said Marriott has a responsibility to green the global supply chain, recognizing the massive footprint that Marriott hotels have worldwide, the industry has worldwide. And he was way ahead of his peers and his time. And so we really spent the past 10 years incubating a solution, building a solution, I should say, with Marriott to do, in fact, just that. And today, that solution is now available, supporting not only the built environment, but also all kinds of products, med-surg products, operating supplies and equipment, you know, all based on this continuous improvement methodology through data and analytics and performance improvement.
Thank you very, very much. I'll ask you a handful of follow-up questions, and bear with me here. So first, favorite professor at Harvard Business School. Who was the favorite professor? Anybody that had a particular impact on you and your thinking?
Oh, my gosh. Ray, I'm going to blank on his last name, and I'm so sorry. I have to confess, I'm not the best at names, but he was the professor who led the agribusiness curriculum at Harvard Business School. And it was absolutely fascinating to see this juxtaposition of, you know, the world of how we feed ourselves and business. And a few colleagues of mine and I worked on a second year project looking at the whole market for fresh prepared foods out of the grocery channel, which is now a core part of how many of us eat. And he was amazing. And he actually had an executive from Cott Beverages come in to speak, who had a profound impact on me, and that she said, directed to the women in the section in class, of which there were 20% of us at the time. She said, you as women can think about your career in a different way, balancing, you know, which to many is a myth, right? How do you balance being a mother and raising a family with a career? And she said, you can look at your career in a different way, which is doesn't have to be the same ladder, step ladder up, but you have the ability to come in and out as a result of, you know, of managing the challenges of being a mother and so on. And I never forgot that. And I'm so grateful to him and to her for being able to create a pathway or help me understand that there was a different pathway to take.
Thank you. Two other quick thoughts on professors there. Did you take from either Regina Herzlinger or from Michael Porter, either of those, and any thoughts?
Yes, I did. I had Michael Porter, and one of the key takeaways in Michael Porter's class that I certainly see today in the world of business and manufacturing is the concept of the clustering of business and what that means in terms of innovation, the ability to attract and retain talent, and access to resources. And it's just interesting to have seen that played out in my career in terms of the validity of that and also some of the challenges that exist when that clustering occurs. So those are one of the most memorable things that stood out from his class to me.
Thank you. One more question along those lines. Well, it's really coupled into two questions. I can't help myself. Is Roger Fisher, did you take Roger Fisher in negotiation? And did you find the people at the business school or the law school to be brighter, more entrepreneurial? Any thoughts on that?
Oh, my gosh. So it's Ray Goldberg, by the way. I remembered his last name.
Thank you.
In terms of that, I did not take from Roger, but I took from his one of his counterparts. You know, it's interesting, Scott. I went to University of Illinois for undergrad, which at the time had the top accounting program and one of the top undergrad business programs in the country. So I have the juxtaposition of a big, you know, 10 university, or at the time it was Big Ten, compared to being in a, you know, at HBS. I think that there's nothing that replaces street smarts. You know, it's I'm not sure that I would say that the colleagues, that I was at school at, or even speaking to myself, would be, necessarily more masterful negotiators than those who really understand human behavior. And so there are certainly those who were at Harvard with me who did both, but generally as a rule, I would say that street smarts have a lot of cred when it comes to negotiations.
Well, certainly. And certainly there's a lot of, you know, so much of, aside from everything else, financing, investing is this mix of behavioral finance versus analytical finance. And there's also this issue of, correct, you know, emotional intelligence as a leader versus brilliant, yes, leadership thinking, but it can't be replaced by great emotional intelligence as a leader. Very distinctly different things, and sometimes very hard to train somebody who's so brilliant. They might be brilliant in one thing, but honestly brilliant in emotional intelligence. I have my background out of full confession, also graduated from University of Illinois, you know, accounting program and so forth and finance program.
Oh, go live guy.
Exactly. And having one of the great seasons in 20 years or so this year in football at 6-1 and so forth, which we thought we might never see again. And then also,
it's about time.
It is more than about time. And then to add fuel to the argument of who is brighter, Harvard Law students or Harvard Business School students, I did go to Harvard Law School, but I always found the Harvard Business students to be far more enterprising and far more charismatic than the Harvard Law students, which were very bright and a fascinating mix of having that same experience from major Big Ten university to a more private elite university and sort of seeing the differences, the pluses, the minuses, and all those things. And I find it to be a fascinating discussion and so forth. So, no, thank you for indulging me. And I find it fascinating, though. And talk a little bit about, Joanna, you've built this great business. What are you most focused on and excited about now? And then the other thing I need to ask, and I forgot to ask you, is Tesla versus Prius, or what car are you most excited about currently? Since you were an early Prius adopter, what car are you most excited about currently? And then we'll get back to what are you most focused on and excited about currently in business?
Okay, well, I'm going to take the car first. I love the Rivian. So I'm no car expert by any stretch of the imagination. But I love that the leap forward that it's made to, reach a much broader consumer population with a multi-purpose vehicle. There are an awful lot of truck drivers out there on the road. And so I think that statement that's coming from Rivian, really has helped, drive, action, across the automotive industry. So, that's my quick answer on that. All right. So, what I'm most excited about now, in the space that I'm in, it can be a very polarizing space. It can be a space that's filled with gloom and doom. I mean, you pick up the headlines and you want to go, you know, into a cave or hide under a rock with all the predictions of what's going to happen to our world. What I'm most excited about is the energy and innovation that I'm seeing come from people, all different types of people who are rallying around a can-do spirit of we can do this. We absolutely can find ways to operate differently, to create product differently, to buy differently, still supporting the profit plus people and planet. I mean, I do call myself a capitalist tree hugger, and we need all of it, right? But that enthusiasm and innovation that I'm seeing out there gives me great hope. And I'm proud to be amongst those who are helping to facilitate the conversations. And to that end, that's one of the most critical areas of focus that I have, is educating and helping those who don't yet see a way that there is a way forward, as well as really helping those who are leading the way in innovation and in thinking differently, giving them the stage, giving them the opportunity to be able to share the things that they're doing. I like to use an example that many people can relate to. There was a cartoon that you may be familiar with that showed all these people standing around a truck that couldn't fit under a bridge. And a little kid comes along and says, "Why don't you just let the air out of the tires and then the car can fit," right? It's that kind of thinking that is what's going to solve the problems. We are so used to doing things a certain way, and we need to step back and ask the question, why are we doing it this way? Does it make good sense from an efficiency standpoint, from a business standpoint, from supporting the challenges that we face? And there's this fear that the work that we're doing in this space will create a significant increase in cost and the products won't be as good, and so on and so forth. The opposite is true, because there's a lot of waste, period, in everything that we do. And if we can think about it in a smarter way, we can make real change happen. So that's what I'm most excited about, is really helping to propel more of that and to really support those who are in the forefront of doing the heavy lifting and give them the spotlight. And then you asked a third question, and I think I missed that third question.
No. You really hit the two. The car question, what are you most focused on and excited about now? Yep. I guess what I would say is, you know, the focus one could be different than the excitement one. The excitement is the one of looking at more and more people behind this, looking at more and more energy behind it, more and more new ideas. And I'd say to you as a founder, CEO, what are you most focused on? What are your big priorities currently?
Scale. The change that has occurred in the ESG movement, if you will. I mean, it's a tidal wave, and not to make it sound destructive, but it's absolutely massive. When Scott, you'll appreciate this. When you're getting changes in SEC regulations and international financial standards boards making changes as to the disclosure requirements that companies, whether they're public or private, have to do to account for people and planet, which have then not really had the same place at the table as the typical shareholder specific focus. That has just created enormous demand for data and analytics. And so what we're focused on is rapidly scaling to support being able to provide that kind of information to all critical stakeholders who need it, as we're all on this journey towards decarbonizing our economy.
Thank you very, very much. I want to thank you, Joanna, for joining us today on the Becker Private Equity Business Podcast. Amazing what you've accomplished, and fascinating how you've done it. Thank you for joining us today on the podcast. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Scott.